We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Mike. And another gut-wrenching loss last night. Anthony Davis unable to go. LeBron was sick and able to go and played actually very well in that game. But as we've seen throughout this season, the Lakers are not particularly competitive if Anthony Davis doesn't play in the game. And then, you know, I thought there were some mistakes made within it. They're a historic shooting night from Golden State. That's kind of the top line item from the actual basketball. They, of the, I believe, 4,000 plus games where a team is, or no, I think it was 3,000, that a team has shot 43s in the game. Best shooting percentage of all time. They make 26 threes. Lakers without that rim protection. Mike, I've got some thoughts in terms of like, how do you game plan when you don't have your rim protection? And I thought that there was sort of a damned if you do, damned if you don't type of element to the Lakers defense, but they fought back, right? They were, even at halftime, you know, Draymond had hit freaking five threes in the first half. And it's like, we're down 11. This is still a gettable game if they cool down. And they pushed back, right? There were a couple of points. It was like a 5-point game. And then end of the third quarter, Mike, we've got Jackson Hayes out there with the small group that can't score. And it goes from 5 to 16, 17. And that's pretty much that. LeBron, you know, really tried to give it a push in that fourth quarter, and they got it to within like 7 or 8 a couple of times, but really not that competitive as has been the case with all the games. And Mike, obviously, you know, massive standings implications. So lots to talk about that specific game that I think translate into big picture stuff. But give me your thoughts on last night.
I get the text about Anthony Davis a couple of minutes before, right, the news comes out. And immediately my whole mindset to what was going to happen in the game shifted. And I think it's very difficult for the Lakers and the players in that locker room to not feel that same way, just because they are all aware of what Anthony Davis does, and they are all aware that none of them can do what he does. There isn't some younger guy. I guess the best example of this would be a young Kobe Bryant, and this is an era that you followed more than me, where something like that happened. Hey, this guy's out, Shaq's out, and Kobe's like, yeah, let's go, right? Like the, you know, there's just a certain like je ne sais quoi or something like that. But what AD brings defensively, because of what the rest of the personnel is on the team, and this is something that we've known about all year. It's something we talked about in the offseason as a concern. If Anthony Davis misses time, how are they going to defend? Is there a scheme that's actually going to work? And so against this specific team, we just watched this happen because AD left the Warrior game on March 16th because he got hit in the eye. The Lakers were up 6 at the end of the first quarter, and then Steph Curry could not have looked more comfortable for the rest of the game because he knows he can get in the lane. Nobody's going to be able to come and really deter him too much. And so when you talk about the historic level of three-pointers that Golden State hit, and by the way, the 26 are the most that any opponent has ever hit on the Lakers. So it is, I think the previous high was 25. Houston got it in 2019.
It was, Mike, it was one away from their franchise high. And when I heard that, I was like, God, think about how many heaters those guys have been on over the years.
Yes, but being in the building, I did not feel like it was some completely ridiculous level of shooting. I felt like These guys are wide open. Now, it's one thing for Draymond to be wide open, and I get that's part of the game plan. Even if we've discussed in previous pods how we don't love the whole, like, challenging any NBA player, even if it's the worst shooter in the league, to just leave them completely wide open, I still think you can close out some, but that's a different conversation. We've been down that road before. The Draymond 3 certainly got them going and made them more comfortable, but I just felt like without Anthony Davis, the players are just so hyper-conscious of giving something up at the rim that they were all tentative on guarding on the perimeter as well. And that plays right into Golden State's hands. They know better than anybody how to handle that. And I just felt like Steph and Draymond and Clay, like they were, and Chris Paul, by the way, I thought was brilliant at this as well. Chris Paul is not the, like, he has his limitations. I didn't love the move for them, but this specific game with no AD and having just a basketball brain of his level to manipulate the defense and knowing, okay, if I go this way, I know they're going to react here because AD's not on the floor and somebody's getting a wide open three. And then Steve Kerr drew up about eight different ATOs that resulted in wide open, like nobody within 10 feet. Three-pointers, Pete. They unloaded some of the playoff playbook, I think, some of the ATOs that they were saving, because they knew if they won this game and kept winning, the Lakers cannot catch them. And the second that AD went out, I got the text, the Warriors find out, they were licking their chops. And I could see it. I could see it in Steve Kerr's face. I saw him in the walk by the locker room, and you could just tell. Just like if the Lakers had to win a game and you found out that Steph Curry wasn't playing, they'd have a little skip in their step. So I thought that was the thing. It was all about AD. We're going to get into, it's not like it's just that, but that the not having what he can do, even at like a half 50% level, to me was damning in this game. And in most of the other games, the Lakers have lost without him, you know, save for the kind of rally around the flag against a shorthanded Memphis team where LeBron led the way last week.
We just haven't been competitive without AD. And when you're defending without rim protection, the best chance you have is to kind of form that phalanx and really guard the rim, where the way the game started out, there was a lot of attacking the front of the rim, right? And so afterward, you heard Darvin and you heard several of the players be like, we actually executed the game plan. And I know that it's easy to be like, Golden State, how the hell could you leave them open? I think there are two different types of threes that we gave up in that game. There were several of the Draymond threes where he was actually spotting up a couple of feet behind the arc too, where you flip that on its head and you've got so little rim protection at the rim. If you're the coach and like you get beat off the dribble, say you close out harder to Draymond, what's he going to do at that point? He's going to put the ball on the floor and attack the rim, because he knows better than anybody out there, right? Where the Lakers are weak.
And then your rotation. And he throws the lob.
It's a wide open three, right? In a different type of way. It's usually going to be a dunk or a layup at the rim. And it's like, if from a coaching perspective, if you get beat by Draymond Green because you closed out too hard on him at like the 28 foot mark, while we have no rim protection back there, that's actually a mistake. So there was several of Draymond's threes where it was like Jackson had switched on him or Dinwiddie was on him, and they were at an appropriate distance from Draymond. Those are entirely different from the let's let Steph Curry step into threes. Every time Stu said "uh-oh" on the broadcast, there were several of those as well. But I think that you really make a great point, Mike, of when players mentally. On the defensive end, you usually have one of two choices. If you're in the player's brain in any particular circumstance and they're really engaged, their defensive responsibilities are usually you either got to go to this guy in this direction, or you got to go to that guy in that direction. And it's usually in the paint versus toward the perimeter type of direction. And when you know that Anthony Davis is not behind you, you're always going to be leaning kind of in that direction. And especially with the way that game started with Golden State attacking the basket, that I think really played into that. And the Lakers kind of shrunk into the paint. And they're okay to not so great three-point shooters between Draymond, Kuminga, GP2, and Andrew Wiggins, I think, went 11 for 18 from three. And so certainly several of those were of the uncontested variety, Mike, but it's certainly not the first time that we've seen it this year. It's just that it speaks to the level of like when you don't have AD and when your roster is so built around offensive talent, without him, it just creates these catastrophic problems for the team on defense.
Right. And I don't know that there's a game plan. Like, this is not a game where I'm going to be super critical of the coaches and like what they were trying to do with Anthony Davis against this specific matchup. And so I think this is basically just a bad luck loss. And so was the one against the Timberwolves. Now, that doesn't mean that the Lakers couldn't have found some way to play better. And there were guys that really struggled. There's no doubt. But that to have done all of the work that the Lakers did, winning 9 of 10 games, you know, having Minnesota at home and then Golden State at home and looking over in the standings. And we'll get to this probably in the third segment, kind of specifically what happens next. But just this having this real opportunity to get to as high as the 6th seed, but probably at worst the 7 or the 8 if the Lakers win even one of these two games. And then to have Anthony Davis get hit in the eye, have no foul called, and have him not return, not just for that game, but then for the game after. And by the way, I don't know for a fact that it's because of the eye, like the nausea and the headache. Maybe that was something else. Maybe he was sick. Maybe he caught what LeBron had. And Pete, that was the other part of this that I think we've now kind of forgotten, we haven't forgotten, but we haven't discussed. LeBron came to the arena like 90 minutes before tip-off. LeBron usually gets to the arena 5 hours before tip-off to really get himself going. He was sick, like really sick. And I think to the point where he may have been throwing up at some point, like that, either just before the game or during the game. So to have that, and he very impressively found a way to get to his game and kind of I loved his refuse to just give into this mentality that he had, and that will serve the Lakers potentially moving forward. So that just that on top of AD being out and the way that he went out, but then to have LeBron be sick. And by the way, we know that LeBron missed the Minnesota game, in case we forgot, and then in this game was not there. So it's just awful luck based on what happened there. Now, I know that's not the only thing, Pete, though, that you notice about the game, and there's something in particular that you're going to hit after the break.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also discover more than 60 add-ons every week like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to keep you stay fueled. They are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. It's also flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. Head to factormeals.com/LakerFilm50 and use code LakerFilm50 to get 50% off. That's code LakerFilm50 at factormeals.com/LakerFilm50.
Yeah, from the bad luck standpoint, if you narrow it just to these last two games, of course they are. But of course it is bad luck. But there were a lot of games that weren't a matter of bad luck that we've dropped earlier in the season that are, it's like I said to you before the pod, like, let's do the autopsy after the body's dead. And we'll have plenty of time to discuss what the hell happened this season. But there were actually two things that specifically happened in this game that I think are indicative of kind of bigger picture things that we will talk about later down the line. First, one thing, we've talked so much about the lineups in terms of if we're like talking about where could we have scrounged out a couple more wins over the course of this season. Trayce Jackson-Davis started that game. I think of great Mike Garcia, who is our draft guru here on the pod. He was a big TJD fan. And when discussing Jalen Hood-Schifino, I remember reading on his Substack, which is an excellent read, him when he talked about JHS, he was like, actually, his screen guy is really good. And so to see a guy that we passed up on twice starting in a big game for a team that they had all their guys, they had their whole rotation, and decide, actually, this guy, while we're starving at the big man spot, is tough. They also had pods, right? And so we didn't get a single win this season. There wasn't a single game this season where the rookies were like, hey, they were helpful in that game toward a victory. Not a single one. And so when we've talked so much about the lineups, but watching TJD start and be good in that game is rough. And so, and then the second thing is, in terms of, we were just talking about the idea of not having rim protection, how you kind of got to create that phalanx and protect the paint. that is a different style of defense that requires a different type of guy. And so this has been something that has shown up over and over and over again on the should this guy play or should that guy play type of debates. And I want to reference last night's game just to be very specific about one kind of micro thing with that. And that's the Cam versus Max, who should play in those type of minutes. Cam is a pressure defender, right? When Cam is at his best on defense, he's really getting up into a guy's jersey, getting a lot of deflections and back tap steals, being very destructive in a good way, right? Creating plays and creating kind of chaos for the other team. But it is built on his ability to be, to apply pressure and be more athletic. But that's actually the opposite of what you need defensively from a perimeter defender when you have to create that phalanx, right? It's one thing if you're pressuring a guy and then you're funneling him back into Anthony Davis behind you. But the phalanx style, the protect the rim style, is much more of like you got to keep guys in front of you. And so Max is one of our best guys on the team, maybe the best at just closing out to a three-point shooter. He'll chop his feet. He'll get his hand high. It's a very like fundamentally sound style of basketball that has its own weaknesses too. But if you're playing a, we got to keep these guys out of the paint, but also get to the three-point line, Max is actually a much better player. And that ability to get out there quickly with a high hand and a good athlete from a guy who can rebound as well is actually super helpful. And then obviously the offensive implications of that too. That group that I was talking about earlier that can't score, part of it is because you've got a negative guy like Cam Reddish, right? From a, like, small groups are supposed to be able to score. That's not supposed to be the thing that they're bad at. But if it's Dinwiddie, Gabe, and Reddish on the floor at the same time, you've actually managed to put a pretty bad offensive group on the floor while still being fairly small. And D'Lo was your best option in terms of breaking down a defense. And he had an awful game, I thought, in terms of just intensity on certain possessions and things like that. So if he's your main guy that can break down the defense matched up against big wings, it's totally a recipe for disaster. And so in the broader like lineup discussions, like, yes, are we super shorthanded in a game like that? For sure. But if you keep making mistakes like that, where it's like you're actually putting a pressure defender out there when you don't want guys to get to the rim, and there's mismatches in that respect that have been important just throughout the whole season.
Yeah. So to take that last point first, it's tough to argue with. I do think that covering various teams over the years, typically there are going to be at least one or two factors why coaches are playing certain guys in certain situations that are factors that go into it that aren't just what we see on the game film. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that's the case, like with Max and Cam. And in fact, I'm with you on that one specifically. And I just like the way that Max Christie's played. I'm co-signing that point. I'm just saying that, like, there are reasons for these things usually, and kind of like why one guy is playing and the other isn't. But I, again, can't argue with that one. For the rookie stuff, yeah, so Trayce Jackson-Davis is a good player. He is 24. And so this is one of those cases where, like, Trayce Jackson-Davis this year is going to be better than a lot of rookies. And the ones that the Lakers took are both, like, around 20. And I think that when you go into the end of the season and you're the Lakers and you're thinking, all right, well, we feel like we have a pretty good chance of signing Christian Wood, you know, who is sought after at least because of what he was looking for contract wise. You know, it wound up being a vet minimum. That was not the contract that he was on previously, and he had been a very productive player. So you're not thinking that if you draft a rookie center that he's going to be playing over Jackson Hayes and Christian Wood, and therefore maybe you try to take a bite out of the talent apple. And see if you can get a real asset into the future. And whether or not Jalen Huccifino and Maxwell Lewis turn into that, it hasn't been a great rookie year. There hasn't been a lot of promise, certainly on the NBA court, even if there was some good progression for the South Bay Lakers. So those are sort of two competing things. Are you looking to draft somebody that can come in and play? Hey, what if Christian Wood doesn't work out? What if Jackson Hayes doesn't work out? Because there's little behind Anthony Davis. Maybe that should impact the type of rookie that you're taking on LeBron James teams. But I generally like the idea of just taking, of separating those two to an extent and going after the talent and then trusting the veterans to come in and play. So that's a longer discussion, Pete, but I certainly can't argue watching the Warrior game and watching Trayce Jackson-Davis and Pods both play really well and then, you know, have the Laker rookies not being able to impact things. I can't make that argument now. That's more of an argument for in like 2, 3, 4 years as to who's turned into what from an NBA player perspective.
But we probably won't have LeBron in two. He certainly won't be 39 years old at that point, right? And so I think that obviously drafting rookies to be able to help out this year, that's not the primary reason why you would draft a guy. But I also think that I would like that to be accompanied with a certain amount of like, oh, but that guy's going to be really good in 3 years. And maybe they are. But it certainly wasn't a promising rookie year, even under those type of circumstances. And so on a LeBron team where winning regular season games is one of those things that rookies can totally help with that, right? I think that there is certainly a ceiling, but, and even the Christian Wood thing, Christian Wood wasn't signed. He was the last guy we signed. And it was something that whole situation had to play out. We drafted our guys way before he was available. And if you look at our approach to the,
but I mean it in the sense of a vet roster spot. That's what I'm saying.
For sure.
That's what I'm saying. Like they kept that spot open for a veteran who in theory is going to be better than any rookie.
I totally agree. What I would say though, is that our approach to the five spot is that I think the five position is different than any of the others in terms of you really have to prioritize defense at that spot. And if you look at the guys over the last several years that we've signed for that position, it's been like Thomas Bryant, Damian Jones. These are types of guys that Christian Wood as well. And Jackson Hayes is a better offensive player than defensive player. Almost all of them have been better offensive players than defensive players. But on an Anthony Davis team where if you want to talk about luck, we've had LeBron and AD for 70 plus games this season. And so this whole scenario of, oh, AD isn't out and we're like, we can't defend anybody hasn't happened nearly as much as it could have.
And this is where, you know, we are fully aligned. And I have been worried about this since the offseason. And what ADA, he usually is going to miss a certain number of games. And even if not, he likes having a presence next to him, at least at times. And wouldn't you, you know, if you have to cover up for everybody else, wouldn't you? Didn't he love having Dwight Howard for a lot of those reasons? And didn't the Lakers win the title that year because AD did have some help with the heavy lifting? I guess, Pete, to get up to your typical couch reference, right? AD had a couple other guys who could grab that thing and help him drag that thing up. And when he's out, LeBron, you know, yes, he can do it a little bit. I liked how much Rui was trying to carry some parts of that couch, but it's just different. You know, it's different from having that other guy out there. And by the way, Jackson Hayes had some great minutes and did a lot of things well. He had high hands and he was getting deflections and he was causing some problems. And it's just like that to me is the one, the argument that I am totally here for. The rookie one, I think it just plays out over time and it's a little harder. But I get what you're saying, especially in the context when one of those veterans is hurt, you know, in the form of Christian Wood, because by the way, Christian Wood would have helped, you know, in a game like that.
We just needed really another five in that game.
Even with some of his struggles. Yeah.
But even a guy like Castleton, right? It's been a few years since since Austin, since a G League guy was able to step in and be like, hey, he provided okay. I thought Skylar Mays has provided some good minutes when he's gotten some run, but by and large, like we haven't gotten much out of those guys either. That's another thing too, is like, if you want to keep kind of, Castleton is a five, you could have played him. And I actually think that keeping that is like, our small ball groups are not good. Other teams are, we were playing the godfathers of small ball in last night's game too. So to see the similar type of ideas just executed it like 3-4 times the level, because that's what they freaking do. And they got the guys to do it. It was just very stark. So let's take a break, come back and Mike, and let's talk a little bit more about this, but then also kind of what's coming next.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, Pete, so what does this mean now that the Lakers have blown these two? I said blown is tough. They have lost these two home games based mostly on Anthony Davis being out, and we covered some of the other things that maybe could have papered over Anthony Davis being out in this type of a context. And by the way, we are not sure yet about AD's status heading to Memphis. There is a practice before we get in the plane tomorrow, and I think that will be very informative, right? Was AD there? Was he able to practice? How's he feeling? And, you know, if so, and he gets on the plane, then, you know, great. Then there's a, you know, I think there's a good opportunity then for him to play. And there's an opportunity for the Lakers to go 2-0. But because of these two losses, Pete, the Lakers not only need some help, but they need a lot of help. Here's the simple breakdown. Like, if the Lakers are able to win their last two games, they need Golden State to lose at least one. They need Sacramento and Phoenix to lose at least two of their three that they play. And they would need New Orleans to lose all three of those games. To make this a little bit like the glimmer of hope for the Lakers to get out of the 10 seed. So the first one would be that Golden State loses a home game. A game. Golden State goes at Portland, home against New Orleans, home against Utah. I don't think they're losing at Portland or against Utah, like barring something just totally weird happening. And it could. It could. They do have that kind of team that where they can really take their foot off the gas at the wrong time. But I doubt it. So that kind of leaves the game against the Pelicans. The trick is that the Pelicans are playing, that will be their second game in a back-to-back setting. Their first one is against Sacramento. So, Pete, there are a couple of paths here. I want to start with the path to catch New Orleans, and that would be they lose at Sacramento and Golden State. The Lakers beat Memphis, and then if the Lakers beat New Orleans, they would pass New Orleans. We don't know if that would be for the actually, that probably wouldn't be to get out of the 10 because that would have meant that the Golden State had won. Would at least allow them to get to like the 9, and then that would push New Orleans to the 10. So that's the first thing. Do you think that's possible? New Orleans could go at Sac, at Golden State, lose back-to-back?
Totally. I actually think that's the of the ray of hope paths out of the 10. To me, like, it was about getting out of the 9-10 game. Now, obviously, I would prefer that game to be at home rather than on the road. But yeah, that is, I think, the best possibility to get to 9.
Okay, so that's one scenario. Now, here's your next scenario. Phoenix just got demolished at home by the Clippers. No Kawhi, no James Harden. I actually think the Harden situation probably helped the Clippers. He has really been struggling lately. Aggressive offensively, really bad defensively. He has taken a big drop off. And, you know, since Pete, to try and lift you up a little bit, I think Russ gets some credit for really bringing a lot of energy. I didn't watch all the game. I watched probably about like 15 minutes total. And Russ, like, he did give them a hyper charge that Harden was not providing in that starting lineup. But I think it's harder to do that now that the Clippers come home and they have Phoenix's attention in a different way, as susceptible as the Suns are. So nonetheless, like, Phoenix goes at Clippers, then they're at Kings, as I mentioned a second ago, and then at Minnesota. Minnesota may be locked into their position, and that would be the tricky part, like, where if the Wolves lose to the Nuggets, which I think they probably will tonight, they probably got in at 3 a.m. It's a back-to-back. They played Washington at home. That would more likely than not clinch the one seed for Denver. And by the way, that's not great for the Lakers, who are now looking like they're not going to have a chance to get into the 7-8 game. So that means even if they get out of the 9-10 and then they win against the team that lost the 7-8, guess who's waiting? Denver. So that's not great. But to get back to Phoenix, if the Lakers win their two, they need Phoenix to win only one of those three games. Also possible, right? Three road games against playoff teams, at least right now. What do you think about Phoenix losing that home game and then the three that they have left?
So between the Phoenix scenario and the Pelicans scenario, Mike, sounds like you're going to be rooting for the Sacramento Kings a lot over these last three games. That's the thing that I'm hearing from all this.
Well, hold that thought, because we're getting to the Kings next. First, just play out this Phoenix scenario.
Them going 1-2 in those, I think it's doable for sure.
Okay. Thank you for breaking that down. Sacramento now, Pete, has three left. Pelicans, Suns, and Blazers all at home. The Lakers, again, would need Sacramento to lose two of those three games if they're going to catch the Kings. And, you know, we're basically just white. Portland is going to give a win to the Warriors. They're going to give a win to the Kings. I think we're just sort of assuming that. So they would need to lose against both the Pelicans and the Suns. Possible. I thought the Kings played pretty well in OKC. They got up by 20 in the first half before Shea just broke them in the second half. And it's the constant thing that I think about with the Kings. I had this game up on my computer while the Laker game was going on. And this is like, if you put your head down and drive, Sabonis just isn't going to do that much. And you get past their perimeter ball pressure. And that's what happened. Like OKC, and it was mostly Shea, just kind of tore them apart. I could see Zion absolutely doing that same thing. Right in that first game. And then Phoenix, you know, not as great from a personnel standpoint. They don't have anybody that's really going to put their head down and just go to the rim over and over. But, you know, they can hit a ton of threes. And so I think that this is the funny thing, Pete. All three of those scenarios are in play. Like anyone, it would not be a big surprise if any of those teams went 1-2 in that setting. It's just that it can't all happen because they play each other.
Right. But I mean, a lot of it will happen because they play each other, right? Like, and a lot of those, you're like, well, one of those teams are going to lose, right?
Exactly.
If you look at it from a holistic, like all three of those scenarios combined, I think that one of them happening is actually decently likely, right? Just based off of the fact that they play each other.
That's kind of, I think, the key point out of this, that the Lakers just need one of these three teams to go 1-2. I take that back. New Orleans would have to go 0-3, right? But they need either Sacramento or Phoenix to go 1-2. And then they would need the Warriors to lose one of their three games, as we went over earlier. And the most likely one, I suppose, would be the Pelicans. So it's a tough thing to essentially look at what are you rooting for. So forget that and just focus on the first night, right? So whoever wins between the Pelicans and the Kings, then we will know for whom to root in that next game.
Like if and that'll be like whoever wins that game, lose, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, exactly. So I think that's the way to look at it. Now, none of this matters if Anthony Davis isn't able to come back. I feel like he probably should be able to come back, but we just don't know. We thought he was going to be able to play yesterday. And if he continues to have nausea and continues to have a headache, who knows? Like maybe he won't. Could the Lakers get by again in Memphis without him? Maybe. And maybe not. You know, Memphis could say, you know what? Now's a good time to play spoiler. Here's Jaren Jackson Jr. and here's Bane. And so it's not guaranteed that the Lakers win those two. And the bigger one that, of course, is not guaranteed is the New Orleans game. This is one where the Lakers, of course, not only need AD, but they need LeBron to be in full try and contain Zion mode, which is what happened in the in-season tournament semi, and which has not happened since, you know, because I think New Orleans is acutely aware and of all that. So I if the Lakers go 1-1 though, then there's nothing happening. Like I almost would say, Pete, if you get to that final day and it looks like you can't get out of the 10 because these whatever the other circumstances, let's say New Orleans splits and the Kings split and Phoenix splits, then you're into a situation where maybe you just rest LeBron and AD in that final game against the Pelicans if you can't change your seeding. And you get ready to try and actually move your way up through the play-in. But bottom line, Pete, still possible, I think, to get to the 9 would be less likely to have a chance to get to the 8. But that, of course, would be the optimal scenario where somehow, like, say, the Warriors lose one game and then either the Kings or the Suns or the Pelicans, one of those three ends up falling out.
So basically what it comes down to is we're very likely to have to win two games to get into the playoffs in a do or die type of scenario. Yeah. It's sort of like being down 3-2 in a playoff series. And that's how we won the 2010 finals, right? We were down 3-2 coming back. And so that's kind of where I want to end this, Mike, is that we've set the groundwork for, hey, look, this happened these last couple of games. It And then this is the implications on the standings. But what now I want to turn our attention to just from the Lakers' perspective is they're going to have to hunker down and be able to win those two games. And obviously we'll preview them as they come. But what's your thought on just like, where does that leave the Lakers with the way the season has been, with just kind of the mindset that the team is in? You're around these guys, you talk to them. What's kind of like, where are they at?
Well, I think they were in a great place right ahead of that Minnesota game. And they came back and they had established a pretty consistent way of playing, and they kind of knew what they were going to get, even if the bench unit was not completely solidified, right? Gabe Vincent, obviously not comfortable offensively yet. On the nights that he plays, and then if there's no Max, there's no Cams, you're a little smaller. So that was the one element where I think they needed a little bit of fine tuning. But the starters were so good, and you could stagger LeBron and AD enough that it was fine. Like, that was not losing them games or anything. With AD going out, that just leaves a whole entirely different feeling in the locker room. It just does. So I think if AD comes back in Memphis and he's fine and he looks like AD, and whether he has goggles on or not, but he's just right from the start, if he's playing that way, swagger comes back, I think. I do think that it's that simple. And if not, then you're in trouble. So if AD comes back, the Lakers play well, and they're able to reestablish who they were and what they were doing, could they win two road playing games? Sure. Yeah. I mean, of course they could, but I do think that there is at least some element of a hit that they took mentally in this process of more than likely now being in that situation. And, you know, can they overcome that? I just think that it's harder to overcome than the way, like the challenge that they were going to have had they just been able to stay on that track and not veer off once AD got hit in the eye. So it took a chunk out of them, Pete. It's like it took a blow, staggered them a little bit. But it's not a knockout punch. And as long as they're not knocked out, I do think there's enough vets and there's enough pride. And certainly between LeBron and AD, there's enough sort of, okay, fine. Like, we're down in this spot, but we're still the Lakers. We're still former number one picks and all-stars and champions. And I do think that some of that pride can come out. I just think that it's a lot more difficult if it's the 9-10 game and you're going to Golden State, you know, where they're going to be primed up. But if Darius were here, I feel like we should mention on his behalf that maybe the Warriors got a lot of the makes out of the way in that game by hitting the 26 threes. I feel like he said that two or three times in the text thread, and he was getting increasingly mad. So maybe that's the case. Pete, I don't know if I rambled a little bit there, but I guess the bottom line for me is that I just don't want to pretend like this hasn't been a setback and it hasn't taken a little bit of the aura out of the locker room. But they also could find a way to get it back as long as Davis returns and they kind of experience that feeling of playing together again.
Yeah, there's just a massive difference in level of belief and just what they're capable of doing. This is something Austin's talked about a few times in post games, where it's like people don't understand the level of the degree that he takes care of things in a way that Austin would understand, because he lives it on a day-to-day basis of like, I can do this because AD is out there. And so that is that's something that, without that, obviously that's going to have a psychological effect. But also, like, one thing that stood out to me yesterday, like, we played a 9-man rotation. There's been a lower sense of urgency relative to the situation. Really, it's been one of the stories of the season, with the infamous marathon quote and all that, but also the, like, playing 9 guys when, in weird to me, and like, if you've got 7 guys that can play, even 6 guys, we're at that point of the season. Now, it might not matter in terms of seeding, Mike, but like, tightening up the rotation and just getting down to these are the guys that can play in these types of games that are ready to go. I think we're at that point. Gabe, to me, stands out as a guy that I love the individual stuff he's doing defensively. And if we had more of a runway, I think he could work up to a very helpful type of place, but he hasn't scored in several games and he's just not there. So he's, to me, one of the guys as well. And obviously Cam, right? Like, I was stunned Cam came into that game. I know it was to guard Steph, but just tightening up the rotation to whatever guys that you can rely on, which to me are the starters, Spencer, Prince, and Hayes. Those are your 8 at this point.
Yeah, the tightening of the rotation, I think the only balance that I would give, and this is more just me playing devil's advocate because I basically agree with you, the Lakers are basically going to have to play play-in games which these last two have been, in a sense, again, now in Memphis and then again in New Orleans, just for the right to get to most likely the second play-in game before the first one. So that, like, shortening the rotation to that degree and considering all the injuries that the Lakers have had and, like, you know, Vincent not being fully back and Reddish being in and out, and now with AD, now with LeBron and the sickness, I think that it's been a little bit more just triage than it has peed, as opposed to like, here's the game plan, here's what we're going to go to with the eight man rotation. And I think that there was some searching going on there, but yeah, the Reddish point is one that I think we've been pretty consistent on all year. I'm not sure that we've seen a ton of helpful production, you know, for, and I think a lot of it is because of the injuries that he's had and just, he hasn't really been able to find a rhythm. Mm-hmm. And so now, and I think that that's the thing that we share when you just talk about Reddish and Vincent, neither one of these guys has played any type of consistent minutes now. And like that, it's very difficult then to expect consistent production, at least though, from a Vincent standpoint, like you're getting it defensively, but you know, he struggled in that game. And there were a couple moments that he had, like offensively, he's not a guy that's going to get all the way to the rim and finish. And his, when he finds his rhythm, from what I watched in Miami last year, it's because he has some level of volume, right, where he can find it. And Miami had very little in the backcourt where they could mm-hmm. even have a player that, like, Terry Rozier wasn't there yet. Kyle Lowry was not able to do anything. Tyler Hero was hurt. It was Jimmy and Bam, and then Vincent was like their third guy on offense. Well, Gabe mm-hmm. is behind Austin. He's behind D'Lo. He's behind Spencer Dinwiddie. Forget mm-hmm. about LeBron and AD. And so mm-hmm. there's just no possible way he's going to be able to find a shot. It may be the occasional spot up corner three, but that's not, you know, he's not a sniper in that essence. So I just think that it's that's difficult. And maybe your point is, okay, then he doesn't need to play and give more of those minutes to either Spencer or to Austin or to D'Lo in the games that you really have to win. And I totally get that. It just, like, this goes back to the locker room feeling of it. And it's always been the way they've talked about Gabe has been like, oh, well, no, once he gets back, like, it's, you know, he's Gabe Vincent. He was in the finals last year.
I totally get that. This is not really so much an individual argument more than like overall team. We take out all our best
period. Yeah.
Yeah. Pick your guys. It's like in last night's game, we took out all our best players all at the same time. And this has happened several times throughout the season where it's like, we're already without AD, but the guys on the bench are LeBron and D'Lo and Austin and Rui. And that's not something that works in the NBA, regardless of what scheme you're running, what team you are. When you've got your legit five best guys on the bench, Vando's in that mix. In terms of our top six, I think it's fairly clear who our top six guys are. And so, like, none of your top six players on the floor in a must-win type of game, that's the type of thing that I've been just, my jaw's been on the floor for a lot of the season of, like, you're not worried about this? There's not an urgency? I don't know. That's, I want to wrap up there, Mike.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
All right.
I thought you weren't doing the outside.
I know. I said that it's because I wanted to. And then I've been resisting that urge, but, but that's why I wanted to do it through the lens of that specific game, because it was like, that was a must win game for the Lakers. Right. And when you're doing that, if you're trying things, trying to find out who are your guys early on in this year, the period of discovery that Darvin talked about at the beginning of the year, I get that. But that to me is just like a basic sports principle. It doesn't even have to be a basketball thing. If you think of a soccer team or a football team, if they're like, they got their top six guys on either side or whatever on the bench, they're not going to be anywhere near as good. And if they're playing a good team that's fully healthy, that has stakes, you're probably going to hemorrhage those minutes. And that's been one of the stories throughout the season, Mike, is that we will hemorrhage points at certain parts of the game. And I know that it's a game of runs and all of that, but we do it in preventable ways. And that's been to see that pop up in that game with the total understanding that, like, I don't expect the Lakers to win that game without Anthony Davis, but it's just about, like, doing what you can to try.
So in short, like, the reason they lost Anthony Davis,
yes,
like that's the reason they lost. But some of the things that you saw harken back to what's happened throughout the season that has put them in this position to have.
And it mattered in that game too. Yeah. It's what pushes the lead from five points to 17, right? You at least want to put yourself in the position to where when LeBron does put his foot all the way down on the gas, like he did to start that fourth quarter, it can get you to the point of victory rather than having to climb back from 16. If he's climbing back from 7 or 8, like, hey, we might have a chance in that game, because he can legit get to the rim whenever he wants. So, but A lot of meat left on the bone in this this season. We'll wrap up here. We will be back probably on Friday, maybe tomorrow. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
And shot clock now to 5. Bryant. Yes.
And that was a little tough to Albert Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic. Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.